I think you mix that with Mario's model of trust. He's like, you know, I trust that people are working. I trust that people are self-motivated. He never had the like Tom Peters management by walking around model, like didn't have to look over people's shoulders. And him trusting people like that are actually what motivated them. We're peer-to-peer here. We all have a job to do. Let's do our jobs. Like if you like the environment, it's your responsibility to take care of it.
Can you put a price on trust?
Sure.
Innovation, timing, even luck plays a significant role when it comes to achieving success. But if you compromise when it comes to trust, what is the cost? The value placed on trust and a carefully crafted culture were the hallmarks of the vision created by Corey Parmax and his partner at Telax Voice Solutions. A vision that saw their Toronto business go toe-to-toe with the blue-chip companies that ruled the marketplace. Their commitment to both a unique proposition and organizational style led not only to success, but also to a profitable venture that continues even after Telax was acquired. In this episode, Corey will share how Telax aligned vision, culture, and trust to create a bottom line, happy customers, and a content workforce. I'm Don Cameron, and this is the CFO's Diary, Pathways to Growth. A podcast where I use my 4 decades of experience as a CFO consultant to analyze success stories from businesses across the country. Let's meet Corey Parmax. Like many CEO and leaders at some of the world's most recognizable companies, Corey first ventured into the world of entrepreneurship while studying at university. Starting a company became a different sort of class, one that Corey approached with openness and curiosity.
It was a work in progress and it continues to be. And I definitely didn't know and learned more along the way and continued to do so. I'd say it was so bad or so good, it depends, that my motives were so pure that when we started a business, the idea of an exit wasn't even something that I was really aware of. It's not like to build a business, the purpose is to do your best to build a world-class enduring organization, you know, something that puts to a creative purpose the resources of its members to serve a community and a customer. And the idea that if you could do that really well, you would have one of these 200, 300, 400-year-old businesses that would continue to reinvent itself and contribute. And business may be in the wrong word, just it's an organization, a collection of people that are able to bring value together by it focusing them toward a purpose. So it's ever evolving. You have to be flexible to that and you have to look for what's really important and stay aligned with what is important to you as well, because you and your team cannot contribute if it's out of alignment. So you've got to see where the market is going and that may not be where you want to go. And you've got to make sure you take care of the value that you've created and people have trusted you to steward.
The roots of Corey's venture found purchase not in an idea, but with friendship. Teaming up with a bandmate who was both a friend and a fellow collegian at the University of Toronto, they created Box Pilot out of a shared ambition.
We were in the same mindset where we just wanted to work together and build a business. We didn't know what it should be, but we just know we wanted to do it. And we thought like, is this a good idea to do it like that? Like not have an idea and just start something. And most of the time people have ideas, but we found an example where they didn't and we felt confident enough. And that example was Hewlett and Packard. So Hewlett Packard, Dave Hewlett, Bill Packard, I forget which is Dave and which is Bill. They just said, hey, let's go to the garage and let's work on something. And so that's what we did. And we built Box Pilot. Box Pilot was a marketing service for technical companies. And we actually had another idea underpinning it, which is we wanted to invest in software companies, technology companies, and to find which ones we should invest in. We thought, let's help some early founders market their solution. And by offering those services, we'll get to know them and figure out, you know, which founders are worth backing.
Become their partner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So use the lead generation as a way to generate a different kind of leads, or leads for them. So that was a great business that evolved into this category, which we call guided voicemail. So we were into direct marketing. So we offered direct mail, outbound telemarketing, I think strategic partnerships and some kind of online marketing it was called. This was back in the day. And through that experience, we discovered voicemail was a real hindrance. And we were dialing out and just getting voicemail. And we ended up doing a deal with one of our customers over voicemail for the most part, just exchanging info, leaving voicemail messages, sending the contract, getting assigned. And we said, you know, this voicemail, instead of it being a hindrance, how can we help use it effectively? And we found that the best place to use it, like where there was an issue, is like telemarketing was used to augment sales teams. But if you were selling a technical product, you wouldn't want a telemarketer that was not educated about the product get caught on a call with like a, you know, IT director.
That somebody answered.
Yeah, like you're afraid of someone answering. So they couldn't leverage it. But the problem was they needed the scale for things like following up on direct mail because response rates were higher. Inviting someone to a conference, like a highly paid sales rep. So instead of doing that, the model was record a message in our system and we'll actually deliver that message into the voice mailbox. So we'll avoid actually speaking to your prospect and deliver a message in your voice to the prospect so that they could hear your request for them to look out for their direct mail or look out for the invite to Comdex, et cetera. So that was really great because we were able to leverage voicemail, which was everyone's boon to get, into an advantage for someone that couldn't leverage telemarketing in order to gain leverage. So we built the entire business out of that after that. So that's what BoxPilot was and eventually evolved into a full service marketing after I left with guided voicemail as a core function because it's something that we pioneered. But really cool idea. We had like famous people. I think Magic Johnson recorded a message once. Scott McNeely from Sun Microsystems. Yeah, so has a real awesome business to build and learned a lot through that. Just early testing of operational philosophies. And yeah, it was a good experience.
The company's unique proposition, alongside Corey's dedication, hard work, and invaluable partnership, led to success at BoxPilot. 25 years later, and the company continues to innovate and offer solutions to small businesses and Fortune 500 companies. But ultimately, Corey wanted to follow a different path to that of his friend and business partner.
I think back about what that direction shift was, and I didn't have the language for it now, then, but I do now. And I think this is the first time I thought about it since. And the answer is we wanted to build different cultures. We wanted the culture of the business we work in to be different. And we wanted the objectives and the definitions of success to be different.
After his exit from BoxPilot, Corey had the ability to search for a new path, one that led to a new and promising partnership. Looking to learn more about developments and opportunities as telecommunications began to shift from analog to digital, Corey was introduced to Mario Perez, the founder of Telax Voice Solutions.
You know, it went from an intro within 15, 20 minutes, we're kind of like cross-pitching each other because tech. And I was like,
one
I showed him my website.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, we built this and, you know, I can sell it. So let's team up or let's at least explore. And the thing with our partnership at the beginning was he's had a lot of folks that are willing to do their best. And if nothing works out, that's on him and they move on, right? Like it's I think the problem with CEOs today, like big corporate CEOs, it's all optionality, meaning I could swing for the fences and if it works out, I'm good. But if it doesn't work out, I move up for my next gig. And those of you left carrying the bag, right?
So what? Yeah.
Yeah. In the public case, it's just these nameless shareholders, you feel like. But those are people. And one of those people, in the case of Mario, is Mario. And he's like 100% on this business. So he was a little gun shy about big promises without skin in the game. So I was willing to put some skin in the game and put my money where my mouth was. I was fortunate enough to have a bit and have a bit of time to, you know, more important than the money. Because I didn't end up spending much money. I ended up spending the time just to prove to people. But he wanted to know that I was willing to. We worked it in like a little agency model for a bit as we got to know each other. You know, start developing leads, but I sell them and then he delivers the solution to them. And we use a similar name. So it's all aligned. I mean, very, very entrepreneurship. Like, you know, this is like the what?
Quite arm's length till it wasn't going to be arm's length.
Yeah. And then like make it work as a seamless company so that none of the customers are any wiser. So they're not feeling uncomfortable that we have this agency inside the tent. But I loved it because that's what you need to do to move forward, to de-risk for each other and show and prove.
After putting his skin in the game, Corey's new partnership with Mario became a winning alliance. They were, to steal his oft-used term, aligned. As we'll find out, placing value in trust really helped the team at Telax work, something that Corey is eager to praise his partner for.
I would say, like so much of our culture, that part of it came from Mario, our founder. Mario's entire ethos was trust, and the business's entire ethos became trust.
Their trust model wasn't bound to just internal relationships. Extending it to clients, making it part of their customer-focused strategy, meant that Telax was years ahead of the market. Creating the best solution or product is crucial, but equally important is the support that comes with the offering. Even cutting-edge tech companies need to put effort into the human side of their business. How are you there for users? How do you prioritize their experience with the product? Clients are more likely to be loyal if they have better outcomes. I'll definitely take a good relationship and a product that needs work over a great product that offers a horrible customer experience.
For the perspective of most customers, they're buying a trust in the company. Sure, they're buying your product, but at a minimum, they're buying that the product is what it says it is. But in technology, even more so. The product is never what people say it is because it's not even what they think it is, unfortunately, you know? And the IT teams and the business users of technology know that. They know the upside of technology, and they've learned to anticipate the downside of technology. I mean, the entire like Microsoft ecosystem exists because the Microsoft product like isn't that great stably, but it's really great productivity-wise. You wouldn't have like the blue screen of death in the lexicon if the product worked as it's supposed to, right? People know, hey, I'm going to get this amazing word processor and a great operating system, and once in a while, the thing's going to crash. So that's just a part of life. So the team's a long way to go around to say, when an enterprise software buyer is buying, they're buying functionality, they're buying capability, but really they're buying trust in that team to deliver on the product.
To be there.
Yeah, exactly. And that was one of the core lines that Mario drilled into all of us was, it's not if technology fails, it's when it fails. And two things, are you designing the architecture such that when it fails, there are systems to get the backup and get the redundancy? And two, how is your human interactions organized around that? And how can you ensure that the, you know, the bumps are as little as possible? And you're 100% accountable because ultimately the trust is about accountability, right? Will you be there when things go wrong? Will you fix it quickly? Will you ensure the same thing doesn't happen again? Like, are you a credible partner? Can I trust you? And often the bigger the orgs get, the harder it is to get that kind of accountability. So I think we punched above our weight class for a long time because of that and continue to do so.
Corey feels that there were a couple of factors that helped them to not only step into the ring with the heavyweights, but also compete. Innovating with new technology alongside the migration to cloud services and accountability, born from that trust that Telax put a premium to. It all added up to further opportunity, thanks to Corey and Mario's instinct to go all in when it came to serving their clients.
I think that's the right thing at the beginning, I think, most of the time, because you also don't know who your best customer is. So you have an idea, you bring them all in, you do your best, and then you continue to build the product around the ones that seem to be getting the most value that you're able to help the most. That's often where people get stuck. I think we were getting stuck there, and we had to realize that it's counterintuitive, even though everyone says it. It still feels difficult when you're a smaller business to say no to some business in a belief that you will get to say yes to businesses that you can help more later.
Yeah.
But when they're knocking at the door, we had a massive strategy shift and it required us to stop selling direct and then selling through channel partners 100%. And we had sales folks knocking at the door saying, I have this big direct deal. Dare me not to close it. And you have to say, yeah, I dare you.
Sometimes guaranteeing the best customer experience means being responsible about your capacity and saying no. With an innate desire to analyze and the commitment to stay focused, a strong foundation of few rather than a weak foundation of many paid dividends for Corey and Mario.
Things reveal themselves, you notice them, you start paying more attention, and you start putting them all together. And then maybe you have like some kind of compelling event that brings them all together. For us, the compelling event was like, what's our growth path? We got from here to there. Now, how are we going to get from there to the next place? And we were in that time, I think we were describing earlier, where you're taking all the business you can get and it's great because they're paying and you're really happy about it. So you're like, wow, it's amazing. And then you're thinking, okay, who is really the folks that we're helping the most, that really appreciate what we're doing, that we're able to help well? And who are the folks we're not helping well and that aren't really a fit? And that's when you start thinking about what's our strategy for growth, that those other things you noticed that you weren't sure why they were important, but you noticed them. And one of them was just the operational issues that we were noticing. So early days of the cloud or mid days of the cloud, and you know, the internet isn't super great. And maybe that's okay when you're browsing or you're downloading on a Dropbox, but when you're dealing with real-time voice, that's a problem. So when you've got smaller customers and those customers don't have IT teams, they're calling you to troubleshoot and your support team is saying, we can't troubleshoot the open internet and win, then you're thinking, there's a long-term cost baked into this and you got to think about that. And then you put that away. And then later on, you look at the different customers you're serving and you realize, oh, you got some customers that are through these partners and those ones are costing a lot less. Why are they costing? Oh, okay. Well, actually, we're using their infrastructure to deliver. So we actually don't have this like transport fee. Oh, and you know what? Some of them prefer to do support. And because the internet is actually what they're delivering, they're able to clean that part of it before it gets to us. So we become second tier. Support people are so much happier because they're dealing with like real problems that they can solve. So you have like happier support people. You have cost that is less. You've got this round and round in the internet that you don't have to deal with. And then like other parts of it start coming together. And you're like, maybe this is something we've got to really dig into. I mean, I make it seem like it just happened like that. But, you know, you dig in, you look, you sense something.
In a way, yeah, it evolved there.
It evolved there.
Yeah.
I think you just have to be aware that you need to be evolving. Like, you are evolving, right? Like, it's changing. Things are changing. You need a competitive strategy when you have a competitive situation. And we were in a very competitive market and category. So we had chosen to bootstrap and we had refused funding at that point still, but our competitors were starting to announce big rounds. And they were able to really spend a lot of money in bringing in customers. So that made us think like, we have to either match them in doing what they're doing, or we're gonna have to do something different, smarter, because they're going to win the, you know, what Napoleon said, when there's two armies, God is on the side with more cannons, right? So when there's two businesses,
God is
on the side with the one spending more. Now, it doesn't always work out that way, fortunately. And that's when the second army, God gets on your side, and pardon the extended analogy, when you start being strategic. So that's what we decided to do. And we had a few different paths. This just seemed like it made the most sense for us at the time. And also we had the alignments of partners. You know, there's a bunch of things that we thought made sense and how it made sense to go to market and the relationship with the OEM to get into some of those partners. So a lot of things line up, but you have to be aware of them and then put them together just so, and then commit to it. That's the part that I'm the most proud of on behalf of the team is the actual commitment to make the change and then making the change. I think it was—
And then just jumping in and saying, let's make it work. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a thrilling experience because we did it like intentionally, right? Like we took John Cotter, one of the leading large scale change academics, and we took his model and we learned it and we applied it. And any of the, you know, 30, 40 people that were a part of that process could probably run a large scale change project in their organization today as a result. And we loved it.
Corey and Mario had the vision to overcome a barrier and build a distinct and competitive offering. To take on those big cannons and succeed, they used trust, be it with clients or their team. But that trust doesn't just happen by default. Like any relationship, it needs to be built. We've already talked about building trust with customers, but when it comes to trust within the organization, they had to be equally purposeful.
when you're a remote organization and you know the importance of culture, you have to be really intentional about building it. So we went through like a process of indoctrination, I would say. I mean, it sounds more strong now when I use that word, but that's what it was. The experience was softer because when you say it like that, it sounds like, you know, you're coming into a cult. But, you know, there's a reason why the word culture and cult are, you know, very closely aligned. It starts the word for a reason. And I would say one of the main differences, obviously, a cult is around a person and a personality. A culture is about the team and about something, not a cult of personality. Because we had this model of operating that took a high degree of trust, we needed to ensure that everyone knew what the system was and that they were up for it. It's what the Uncle Ben says to Peter Parker. It's like, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, totally.
So we're comfortable with you joining the team and wielding this power. We want to ensure that you're going to wield it responsibly. And so all these models came out to allow that. So to deploy that and keep that strong as the team grew and grew, we had different things that helped do that. Like one of the things I'm thinking about was our decision-making model. We had to articulate a type of decision-making that helped us be quick, but yet helped us tap into the collective brains and minds and ideas that were on the team. So on one hand, you have autocracy, which didn't work for us because we were often trying to diminish the inherent authority that came with a title that wasn't necessarily earned, right? So if you're a corporate, I have a big title and I make all the decisions type, we wanted to reinforce that that wasn't how decisions were made. Having said that, we didn't want to have a consensus model because often the opposite to autocracy is consensus. And we know how those kind of decisions are. They're suboptimal, bad for everybody.
Yeah.
So what else you have left with? So we called it the advice model. And the idea was you own the decision. You were the decision maker if that was your space and your responsibility. However, you had the responsibility to poll anyone that had an opinion that was credible or incredible. You didn't have to take that advice, but you had to have a position on why you did or didn't. You had to prove that you synthesized that opinion. And people may not check in on you once or twice, but if basically your decisions are bad and then folks are challenging you on them and realize you didn't actually integrate their thinking on it, then you lost what also another thing we had called tribal authority. You lost the authority that was bestowed upon you by the people on the team, not by your title. And that was the only authority that mattered as far as we were concerned. So to maintain yourself in the flow of what's going on, you had to prove basically two things. One, that you had the best interest of the team in mind, right? Like you weren't making decisions for yourself or some ulterior motive. And then you had to prove that you had actually the domain expertise or at least like the raw, you know, intellectual horsepower to make good decisions.
Yeah.
So if you didn't have those things, the right mix of them at the right time, then your authority eroded. So I don't want to also make it seem like it was a game of Survivor where everyone was being ranked, but it's like over time you get a sense of how is someone operating, and we try to coach each other to this. And the coaching is 360 degrees. Like anyone can ask anyone, hey, why didn't you take my idea into that? And then you should be able to tell everybody right then and there what you thought about it and why. So
getting to see how Corey and his colleagues worked was a privilege for me, and I was impressed to see it in action. Trust meant there was little chance they succumbed to the pitfall of only paying attention to the loudest voice in the room. Even with success, Corey and Mario were keen to value the opinions of others and to learn. In fact, his desire to learn more led Corey to Harvard Business School to get a little structure and validation, as he describes it. It turned out to be an exercise that not only helped to shape his approach, but it helped the entire organization.
At HBS, I got two things. I got good tools that I was surprised at how effective they were, because I actually thought, you know, I don't know if you can learn anything there that's important. I thought like all entrepreneurship was, you know, bottom up from the streets and you can like figure it out. It's by the gumption.
Yeah, surprising. There is some good core academics there, hey?
There is top-down things that really work.
Yeah.
So be open.
You'd recommend it to anybody?
I recommend a course of lifelong learning to anybody.
Yeah.
Because I'm not suggesting what you need to learn, but what is needed will be in front of you when you need it. And this is what I needed, not just me, but what the business needed. And I was fortunate that Mero helped point it to me and that we took the time and the money to help us implement all of that as well. I mean,
A really solid investment in the future of the business.
It turned out to be. And, you know, they promoted it that way. And you were like, yeah, I don't know, because it was quite pricey. But it turns out that it was worth every dollar and then some. So, yeah, massive. And what was amazing was, like, I went, but the entire team went, like, because every session I went, I came back, brought the material, learned it, taught it. Like, I learned it so much better because I taught it to the team once. So totally imbibed it that way. And yeah, that was powerful, powerful stuff.
All businesses face the challenge of headwinds and evolving markets. And having a plan or a mechanism to accelerate, adapt, and absorb are key to prosperity. Telax knew they would have to undertake a strategic shift to not only absorb evolving technologies, like AI, but to continue to meet their customers where there was need. Analyzing this led to a long-term strategy for the business. More precisely, it led to a discussion over the technological capabilities needed to execute one. They could raise the funds to build for the future, they could acquire a firm with the tech they need, or their third and chosen option, get acquired by a bigger player who already had said capability.
And that's where the alignment comes out, because you may want to continue operating this business, but if the fortunes of the business in the market require you to do things that you yourself don't want to do, then you may not have the choice to continue operating that business. Yeah. You gotta like make that decision.
Say what you want.
That's one of the funny things about being an entrepreneur is that like you spend so much of your time trying to bend reality that you don't see the things that you shouldn't try to bend as easily as others, because you spend all day breaking through brick walls with your forehead. Why should this one be any different? Well, this one's called the market, for example. Like, you know, and you could argue you could change it if you're Steve Jobs, but it may not be you that time, that day. And
yeah, totally. Yeah, it's only one in how many lifetimes, how many generations does that happen?
Yeah, exactly. So I say all that to say the life of the product and the life of the team has a certain life that it deserves to lead. And when it gets to a certain scale, like if you have a small business, it's your business and it's like you're making Etsy products. So you want to shut it down, shut it down. But if you've built this value or been a part of that, it needs to kind of continue to grow. And you are a steward of those resources at that point. And you have to put the resources or their lifetime and life cycle ahead of yours.
Sure.
Ideally. So that's why we did that.
And did you feel you did the right thing?
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And they would say the same?
I think everyone, I haven't met anyone that feels differently. I think it's amazing when it works out that way. And I think it's to the credit of everybody. And that's where the alignment comes in. And the lack of, everyone represented themselves exactly as they were. And it was amazing that way. And the product continues to grow and flourish. It's amazing to plug the product into that go-to market machine and then see it just go.
Corey recently left the team from Telax after staying on board for 3.5 years following the sale to Intermedia. With that team and the product making good on the promise, the vision that he built alongside his partner, the reward goes way beyond his financial win. And Corey's next challenge is one that taps into his love of software, applying it in a place of meaning and value.
There's a great site called 80,000 Hours, and it lists like the world's biggest problems. And the purpose of the site is for those who want to pivot their careers into working on meaningful problems. It will help you understand what the big problems are and then how your skills may apply to it. So climate is where we're focused, and we want to help software businesses that are tackling that succeed. And one of the challenges I think with succeeding is them being commercially viable.
Okay.
So, you know, having come from a high purpose, but also high performance mentality, we want to help some of these folks that are maybe only high purpose and don't have enough of the commercials integrated to ensure that really great solutions that are able to help us mitigate and thwart off some of this impact can thrive in the market. That's the focus. So we're looking to build more specifically a B2B sustainability tech stack. So organizations that are looking to offset their climate risks by managing physical and transition risk, carbon management, like measuring their footprint, insetting their supply chains to reduce it. All these kind of capabilities are tools that these organizations are going to need in greater numbers over the years. So we're helping those things come together. That's the plan.
Corey is now focusing on bringing his talents to bear in a hugely challenging arena, but I'm positive his insight and experience will help many more firms in their pathway to success. And I'm keen to hear what lessons he's learned as a successful entrepreneur. Unsurprisingly, having heard from Corey today, you'll know that alignment has to be on his list.
Do you need it? But it's important to realize that it shifts over time. Alignment is different at different stages. It's a verb. It's a work of art. You know, everything's going to change. Everything has to fit. That includes you, your feelings, you know, what you want out of life. But it also means that you're not the most important. So you have to factor all that in very dispassionately, but be honest about it. Once you have alignment, you need to know, are things aligned? So you need to know what's important. You need that for the kind of leadership that we talk about, which is like self-leadership and individual accountability. So you're transparent because you need everyone to see where the coastline is to navigate the boat. And I don't think about it like a boat because this helps the self-leadership. It's an armada. Everybody's in their own boat. So they can get off track. So they're in their own boat. So you being the skipper of the boat just means your boat's going straight. So everyone's boat's got to go the same direction. And maybe you're the one off track. So visibility is important all the way around.
Being in and watching that armada was to me a masterclass on how to execute on a business model. One that today is a destination for many organizations, but one that's rarely reached. And Corey's next takeaway is another that is vital when finding a pathway to growth.
Just having the patience and having the commitment, which requires you to be honest with yourself. Are you in it for the right reasons? Will you have the patience? If you're in it for the right reasons, every day will be amazing because you're not trying to get somewhere.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to get somewhere,
yeah,
that's really difficult. You have to do the thought experiment of, no matter where I end up, will I be happy if I went this way? No matter what the outcome.
And finally, Corey brings us back to culture, going beyond shallow assessments and embracing real purpose.
Maybe the term would be like, get religion, believe in something. At every level of the business, frameworks, purpose, mission, values, just even behaviors, however micro the situation is, you should have a point of view about it. And that's what culture is. It's all pervasive. And those are choices that you have to make every day. And the team makes them together.
It's been a real pleasure to connect with Corey again and delve into his story and ethos. My thanks to him for joining me today. And thank you for listening to A CFO's Diary, Pathways to Growth. You can follow and learn more about this podcast at savvycfo.cpa or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, make sure to rate and review. I'm Don Cameron, and I hope our pathways cross again.